Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The time is right to sign up for a free university education. Step right up, listeners. We're here to tell you how to get an education for free. This is Naomi. I'm so glad you're with us for the third day of our education article for February. Today is the 23rd, and we're on page 36 of your magazine. And joining us once again are Amanda and Bill. Welcome back.
Hey, great to be back.
Now, getting a free university education, that sounds kind of impossible, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like there's a catch, and it doesn't sound real.
Right. Well, and even some universities that do provide a lot of free classes or even free degrees, you're still going to have to pay for administration fees and so on. But what kind of free education are we referring to here?
Well, we've been learning over these last 2 days, or previous to today, just about online education and the ability to get free online education with high-quality teachers.
Right. Specifically, we're talking about a company called Coursera. And we were introduced on the first day to a young man named Christos Porios.
Right. Christos Porios. He is living in a small Greek city, and he's far away from everything, it seems like, but he's close to a computer, and using that computer, he was able to go online and follow a course being taught by Stanford University professor Andrew Ng, a high-level computer course about machine learning.
Right, and he learned so much that actually he was able to enter a kind of a competition, and he was able to get all kinds of benefits from what he learned in this class. Meanwhile, Professor Andrew Ng did what?
Well, him and a colleague of his, Daphne Koller, decided to leave their tenured faculty positions at Stanford University and begin the company Coursera.
Okay. And so we learned yesterday about this endeavor, this project of theirs, and why it makes so much sense right now.
Well, it makes sense right now because there are a number of factors crashing together in the world that actually might make this online learning, the Coursera company, actually very attractive. And we learned about some of these things in the last reading from yesterday.
We did. Let's review those for a minute. Amanda, what are some of the factors?
Well, for starters, we learned that this knowledge-based economy is being hit by a global or weak global economy.
Okay, so what do we mean by knowledge-based?
Well, people who are very well educated, they're needing to retrain because we no longer are needing to use our physical strength anymore. We are needing to use our brain a lot more. Creativity.
Definitely, definitely. And so people get specialized very quickly. They learn how to do one job. If they lose that job, they can't just get another job. They have to retrain themselves. They have to go back to school and learn new skills.
Right. And that's what we see as we continue there in lines 25 through 27. These people now, they've got to go back and learn new skills. But the reality is the cost of learning new skills at traditional schools, universities, colleges, is way too high for many of these people.
Right. Yeah, and I do think actually it's worth mentioning as well that even for people who haven't actually lost their job but are just trying to stay competitive in their fields, a lot of them need to do more schooling as well. However, it is becoming a little bit easier to do that.
That's right, because we see that technology has improved. Broadband access is growing even within poor and middle-income countries. So therefore, what we saw in 2007 with 300 million people being able to stream video now has doubled to 600 million people. So that accessibility is a big factor.
Definitely a big, big factor because if you're able to access that video, then you're able to take the course.
Right. So we've got need, we've got demand, the consumer need and demand there, and then we've got these other factors, cost involved, and then we've got this burgeoning group of people around the world who now have the internet accessible to them that they didn't have before.
Right. And so this idea of getting a cheap education coming right to your own computer sounds very attractive. We found out yesterday that, well, one of my main concerns has also been addressed recently. I thought, why would I sign up for a class where I won't have any proof that I did the class when I finish? But that's changed as well.
That's right. We saw the top of page 35. Just that now we do have certification, and we can get certification for a lot of the courses that we're doing online.
Okay. So it's all sounding really good.
Yeah, it is sounding good. In fact, even though Coursera has never made any money, they are attracting investors because some of the investors have faith in this being profitable in the future. They see tremendous growth potential with it.
Okay. Well, I would say I'm almost ready to sign up.
Okay.
But I'm still not totally clear on how the courses really work. So let's learn about that today on page 36.
To Ng and Kohler, Coursera's mission is simple and yet absurdly grand: to teach millions of people around the world for free while also transforming how top universities teach. Why not take the 75-minute lecture, Kohler asks, break it up into short pieces, and add interactive engagement into the video so that every 5 minutes there's a question? This way, every single person needs to answer the question and retrieve the information. Coursera courses are 6 to 10 weeks long, with an hour or two of videos per week. They feature weekly exercises ranging from problem sets to spreadsheets to design projects or essays, and sometimes a final project or exam. Students can find each other in the Coursera forums, where they have spontaneously formed study groups by native language or time zone.
So we begin by referring once again to Andrew Ng and Daphne Kohler, who we mentioned are the two founders of Coursera. And to them, we discover what?
That they have a mission which is simple and yet absurdly grand. When we say something is absurdly grand, mean ridiculously big or quite large.
Okay, maybe more than is really reasonable.
Yeah.
To expect.
Yeah, if we say something is absurd, we say, well, that's ridiculous almost.
Yes.
So, like, get out of here. You're out of your mind.
Right? It sounds like they have unrealistic expectations.
Yeah.
What are those expectations?
Well, one of them is to teach millions of people around the world for free. That is the first one.
Okay. Yeah. And what's the other part of it?
While also transforming how top universities teach. So changing and improving the way universities, especially top universities, teach their students.
Okay, so they are personally going to teach millions of people for free. Then they're going to change how universities teach people. It doesn't sound like a very sustainable business model to me. Right? I mean, it sounds like they're just trying to give free education to everybody.
Good point. I had some of these questions as I read this, Naomi. I'm like, okay, free is great, but how long can we do free and sustain the business? So we see in the next paragraph, Daphne Kohler goes into some of that. Okay, what are they looking at as far as transforming the university experience? She starts off by saying, why not take the 75-minute lecture and break it up into short pieces? That's the first part.
Okay, I like that because
like
75
it.
Minutes is too long.
Yeah.
I think everyone can agree.
Yeah.
It's hard to sit through a movie that's that long for me. Like, I like to take a little break in the middle, you know, stretch and, you know, go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so a 75-minute lecture could be in shorter pieces. Plus, if you're studying on your own terms, it might be easier to fit in those little segments rather than one big segment. Okay.
Yeah.
Then what?
Then we see that they have an interactive engagement into a video so that every 5 minutes there's a question. So therefore, you wouldn't be bored because you're really being asked to engage yourself with questions.
Okay. I talk about this with my speech class all the time, how we have to say – we sort of have to stop in the middle of what we're saying and say, okay, what would you do if you were in this situation? How would you feel, you know, and really address the audience. What what's going on? Now answer this question so that they're not just sitting there blank, that they're actually interacting with you.
Well, speaking of sitting there blank, that ties in with this next statement. This way, every single person needs to answer the question and retrieve the information. Now, if you're teaching a class, Naomi, and after 5 minutes, you are in front of the class and you ask a question, there's 30 students, you might have two or three raise their hand wanting to answer that question. But in this situation, because everybody's online on their own computer, everybody has to answer the question. So you can't have the rest of the people just kind of sitting there looking down, not looking at you. Everybody has to answer it. I like that.
I like that too. And I think in this format, it might be a little easier for those of us who get a bit nervous to raise our hand in a classroom. Just typing in your answer might feel a bit more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. This kind of format, like you said, maybe they won't feel the peer pressure so much. I think it's also a good motivation for them to remember the information. Mm. So as the teacher is learning, they're like, well, I'll remember this so that I know how to answer later on.
Good. Great point. Okay. Now, how is it set up?
Okay. We see here in the third paragraph, line 11, Coursera courses are 6 to 10 weeks long with an hour or two of videos per week.
Okay. And they feature weekly exercises, not fitness here, but what are the exercises?
Here they are activities just to remember the information you've learned and to also put it into practice. Okay. We see they're ranging from problem sets to spreadsheets to design projects or essays and sometimes a final project or exam. So a lot of variation on the different exercises they need to do.
Okay, lots of variety for sure. Some of them I'm sure are easier to do than others, also for Coursera to grade as well. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of variety for the assignments that get assigned, but then also students can find each other there.
Yeah, we had mentioned the social networking component in the first day, and we see that here because then the students can find each other in the Coursera forums. So this is so key for people who are online, individually studying remote locations. You can feel really isolated, that you're not really participating in a class. But here, there is a way for you to join a group and have discussions about the topic.
Okay. And so actually, I thought maybe these groups would be sort of assigned or randomly given to you, but that's not the case.
No, it's not. We see that they are spontaneously formed through either their native language or time zone. So depending on when you're watching the videos will depend on who you're talking to and, of course, what language you speak. So if you speak English, you'll speak with the English speakers. If you speak Chinese or type in Chinese, then you'll talk with those students.
I think that's a fun point as well, because it means that people from around the world could take one class, and maybe the class is taught in English, and it could be a little bit challenging. But then you find that study group that's speaking your native language, and suddenly you're able to ask those questions and check in with each other and make sure everyone really understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we met that young man, Christos, in the beginning. So maybe there's a group of Greek students that he could form there. A nice little club, actually, for him.
I agree. And speaking of Christos, we have a little more information from him about his experience in taking this online course. In our sidebar there on page 36, it says, answers readily available. And he's expressing his thoughts about the course.
Right. He has a lot of praise for Andrew Ng. He says, Andrew Ng is the best teacher I've ever had, even though I've never met him. And he goes on to say, he was explaining the material very clearly, answering every single one of my questions only seconds after they came to my mind. He said it was like telepathy, which is like mind reading. So he felt like Andrew could read his mind as he was teaching,
right,
which is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a sign of a good teacher.
Definitely.
Because the teacher then has a feel for what the students might need information on. So, and is connected with the students.
But there's an issue. What if I have a question that the professor isn't answering already in his lecture?
Yeah, well, we see as we continue there, if Christos did have a question that Professor Ng didn't answer, then he's got his people he can contact, other students. So Christos can just type a question to the other student, connect with them.
And at first I thought, well, that's a bit of a disadvantage, because in an actual class, you can just ask the teacher. But the fact is, it probably makes more sense to do it this way, because not everyone has the same questions. And asking another student gives that student also a chance to review the information as they're discussing it. So I could see this is a very solid potential way of handling that.
Right. And also, you may go away and then realize you have a question about it. And we see further on that it says, during the first round of Stanford Open courses, students responded to one another's forum posts in an average of 22 minutes. So that's quite quick.
Definitely. So I could hear the lecture, enter a few questions that I had, you know, go grab dinner, come back, and there are my answers from my fellow students.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's a very practical system, actually. Okay, so that's another one of my questions about Coursera answered right there. Let's continue with our final reading for this article.
The students are out there. The world's top 20 universities collectively enroll only about 200,000 undergraduates. There are, conservatively, many millions more who could participate in classwork at the highest level, and most of them are far from any of the world's leading universities. Let's say you're stuck at some no-name state college, says Kohler. Now the top 10% of students at that school have the option to take a Coursera course that could open a door to being employed at companies like Google. The most tantalizing promise of a company like Coursera is the role it might play in improving education for the world's have-nots, high school dropouts, the global poor, those less able to self-teach. Kohler tells me that only 4 months after Coursera went live with its first official classes, total registration hit 1 million. Christos Porios was one of those registrants. His hope is to someday study computer science in Germany or England. He is even toying with the idea of taking classes at MIT or Stanford, but this time in person.
So the students are out there. I think they're sort of asking the question here, well, who is going to sign up for these classes? Like, who are the people that this will really benefit? And we begin this section in with an interesting comment, and this surprised me, actually.
Yeah, it says the world's top 20 universities collectively enroll only 200,000 undergraduates. So we're talking about the group that includes maybe Harvard, Stanford, Oxford, all of the, top 20 schools, their total enrollments are actually very small.
Right. And here, when we say collectively, we don't mean for each school it's about 200,000.
Right.
We mean all together, collectively, as a group, these schools only have 200,000 undergraduates. That's really not that many. I was kind of surprised, I think, because we just saw that number yesterday about Ng's course being signed up for by so many.
Yeah, well, that would be about an average of 10,000 at each school. So you're looking at like Harvard having 10,000 undergraduates. Some of them are going to have fewer or more. Compare that, right, to the 104,000 number we saw that enrolled in Ng's course in machine learning.
Right. So they don't have room for more than about 10,000 students at each school. That's their capacity. But we see in the next sentence,
there are conservatively many millions more who could participate in classwork at the highest level. When we say something conservatively here, it's meaning, and that's just thinking on a small scale, that there would be many millions more. So possibly there is even more than that who could participate in what they have to offer at these high universities, top universities, to the highest level.
Right, conservatively. So taking a guess at the lowest end of what's possible.
Exactly.
Right? And they're saying, well, there's a lot of potential students, actually, but they can't come to the university. They're far away. They can't afford it. There's not room at the school. There's all kinds of reasons why these potential students are not actual students.
Right. And, so we're looking at then this example that's given in line 25. by Daphne Kohler. It says, let's say you're stuck at some no-name college, and no-name state college. And what she means is, for instance, I'm from Pennsylvania, and we've got about 25 state universities, and maybe there is Slippery Rock State College, which is one of the schools. Well, that might be considered a no-name. Nobody really knows about it outside of the local area.
Right. You can still get a degree there, but mm-hmm. it's not especially well-respected in sort of the big world.
Right. Nobody at Goldman Sachs is going to be impressed by your degree from Slippery Rock State College.
Right. But now something has changed for those students.
Now the top 10% of students at that school have the option to take a Coursera course that could open a door to being employed at companies like Google or
Goldman Sachs.
Okay, so he's saying with a little bit of extra coursework at a place like this, suddenly your resume looks a lot more attractive to those potential employers. But the most tantalizing promise of a company like Coursera, when we say tantalizing, often I think of like desserts. People will say, oh, it just looks so wonderful. I can't wait to try it. They're very excited to try this. So what is that most tantalizing promise?
Is the role it might play in improving education for the world's have-nots. And a have-not, we see in our vocabulary focus, is usually people that they don't have money. They have not money. They have not social class or status. They don't have the material possessions like, you know, the latest cars, the latest things like that. We consider that have-nots.
Right. So the people who just are not as well off as most people are in the world. Mm-hmm. So, for example.
Well, we give some examples here. After that colon, high school dropouts. And those would be people that maybe they didn't graduate. They left high school after maybe 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we see the global poor. Maybe there's people in poor villages in India or somewhere like
right.
that.
Right. Well, and I kind of misspoke earlier, actually, because really it's a very small percentage of the world that can afford to attend a good college.
Right.
Most people just don't have that option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you've got people in India or Cambodia, places like that. This is the only option for them. And then those less able to self-teach.
That's an interesting point, too, and that could factor in a lot of people. Of course, some people are very smart and very disciplined, and they're able to just order those books and learn their thing themselves. But for a lot of people, whether they just aren't that personality type, or maybe they're struggling with some kind of learning disorder or mood disorder where it's just harder for them to stay focused and on task, right? This could be a solution.
That's right. We see that caller said that there was only 4 months after Coursera went live with its first official classes, there was a total registration hit of 1 million people. Now, when we say went live, we mean when it first began.
Right, when it first went online and people were able to access it. Then 1 million people signed up. That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know how many classes in total there are, but they did have one class attract over 100,000 students. So, but I know they've got many, and they will be adding more in the future.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as more people learn about this possibility, more and more people will be signing up as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it must be a challenge for them just to keep up with the traffic that must come through the site.
I agree.
Yeah, just handling all of those. It is. They've got a whole team there. We've been reading about Andrew Ng and Daphne Kohler, the founders of this, but they do have an entire team to manage this.
They do, and you can learn a lot more about the company if you find them online. You can check it out for yourself. But we do know about one of the students as well. We met him at the very beginning. We already talked about him today as well, Christos Porios, and he was one of those first registrants, one of those first students. And what's his goal now?
Well, his goal now is that he hopes to one day or someday study computer science in Germany or England.
That's a great goal. And what else?
Well, we see that he is even toying with the idea of taking classes at MIT or Stanford. And when you're toying with something, you're kicking around the idea. You're not completely committed to something. You're just kind of saying, well, maybe I'll try it, maybe I won't. This is so interesting because we saw in day one that he played with data sets he downloaded from the World Bank, and now he's toying with the idea, play with and toy with.
Yes, and so he's thinking, maybe I'll go to MIT, maybe I'll go to Stanford,
but this time in person.
Okay, I think this is also interesting. His success in learning online has not changed him. I mean, he's still interested in doing traditional university as well. So it hasn't made him think that regular education or traditional education is a bad thing.
I think it's great when we see this here. What it has done, there's a couple things. One, it has prepped him in a way. It has prepped him what to expect. It's given him skills that will make him ready for later. The other thing is, I really like the fact he has been able to touch on this and discover, does he like this or not?
Right.
So many people go to university, they go into a major, and they don't even know if they like it or not. And then they will spend 4 years, over $100,000 on something, and they don't even know if they like it.
Absolutely. You know? And then they graduate and do something totally different.
Right.
So this may actually see the quality of student go up, too, for the people that go in person, like this, you know, Christos. They decide, oh, this is really something I want to do, and then the teachers get to teach very passionate students.
That's true. Great point. So my question for all of us is, if you signed up for one of these kinds of courses, what topic would you study?
I would study psychology. I've always had an interest in that. So,
Okay.
I loved sociology and anthropology when I was in school. My major was business, of course, and marketing. But the classes I did so well in were those two, the social sciences. And I've gotten away from that because of the need to work and make money. But I really enjoy studying the social sciences.
Right.
How about you?
I think I would be interested in something to do with maybe social media and marketing, and partly just because it's a newer field. And so it would be interesting to learn what people are teaching about what's just starting to happen in our world. I think it's something that everyone would be able to benefit from, anyone who's interested in signing up. If you sign up, let us know what you signed up for. If you just have your own idea, well, if I took a course, it would be this one. Please post it for us on English Corner or our Facebook page. We would love to hear from you. And, of course, we'll be back soon with another article, so look for that. Until then, this is Naomi,
Amanda,
and Bill
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.